Northwestern University presents the Reviewing Stand, a national radio forum in its 11th year on the Mutual Network. Today we discuss the question, should we adopt a compulsory health insurance program? We welcome to our Reviewing Stand microphone this morning the Honorable Robert F. Wagner, United States Senator from New York, Dr. Herman Kretschmer, President of the American Medical Association, Joseph Lohman, Chairman of the Department of Sociology at American University, and John Pratt, Administrator of the National Physicians Committee for the Extension of Medical Service. You can participate in these weekly discussions in two ways. Listen to the facts and opinions of the speakers. Read the printed word-for-word transcript of the discussion. $1 will bring you these pamphlets for the next 26 weeks. $2 for 1 year, 10 cents for a single copy. Write to the Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois. The first speaker on today's program, speaking from Washington, is the Honorable Robert F. Wagner, United States Senator from New York. Senator Wagner.
My friends, the health insurance plan that I've introduced in the United States Senate is a very simple proposition. It provides that each individual and his employer is to pay premiums into a common insurance fund. These premiums are paid while the individual is working and entitle the individual and his family to medical care when they are ill. The legislation specifically guarantees that each doctor has a free choice of patients, and each patient has a free choice of a doctor. The bill provides that voluntary plans can be utilized in the administration of the system. These voluntary plans include group health plans being run by consumers, employers, unions, individual doctors or groups of doctors, and also Blue Cross hospital plans. The bill specifically guarantees that every hospital shall be free from any federal supervision or control or requirement as to its administration, personnel, or operation. Each doctor may choose whether to be compensated on a fee for services, part-time, or full-time salary, or per person, or some other basis. Specifically, provision is made for giving higher compensation to specialists. An advisory council is established, which is given a specific mandate to advise the Surgeon General of the United States Public Health Service on questions of general policy and administration. Many specific matters under the law require consultation with the Advisory Council before the Surgeon General can take action. Moreover, the Advisory Council can meet on its own motion and must publish its recommendations each year in the public report to Congress. The bill gives each insured person, every doctor, hospital, dentist, or nurse, the right to appeal to a federal court if, in his or her opinion, the Surgeon General violates any provision of the law, and the right is assured to carry the case up to the United States Supreme Court, the highest court in the land. Now I ask you, do these provisions, which I have outlined, sound like regimentation or dictatorship, as the American Medical Association is claiming? The fact is that the views of the American Medical Association do not represent the views of many doctors in the United States, nor the majority of the American people. Let me read to you a telegram that a group of outstanding doctors has sent me, and I quote, "The Physicians Forum congratulates and commends you for introducing a new national health insurance bill in accordance with President Truman's message. We heartily agree that such legislation is the only means to proper distribution of good medical care for all Americans. As practicing physicians, we know that only through such national measures can the health needs of all the people be best served."
End of quote. If the doctors had a complete and unbiased factual statement of the provisions of my bill, and on the basis of these facts, the American Medical Association gave every doctor the opportunity to vote by a free, secret ballot, they would vote in favor of the bill. At the present time, the majority of what the doctors are being told by the leaders of the American Medical Association about the bill is misleading and inaccurate. Every public opinion poll shows the American people are overwhelmingly in favor of health insurance. I am going to continue to fight for the health insurance bill so that the American people can have adequate medical care.
Thank you, Senator Wagner. Now for a statement of the opposing point of view, the reviewing stand takes you to Mutual Chicago Studios for a talk by Dr. Herman Kretschmer, President of the American Medical Association. Dr. Kretschmer.
I wish to state at the outset that the people of this country enjoy better health and live longer than the people of any large country in the world. This is the result of the fine quality of medical care rendered by the physicians of this country under our present system of medical service. The American Medical Association is keenly aware of the fact that there are certain areas lacking in adequate medical care and has constantly urged correction of this inadequacy. The House of Delegates of the American Medical Association has just closed its annual session in Chicago. It might be well to tell you of some of the actions taken by them on some of the current problems concerning the health of the people, concerning President Truman's health program. The first proposal is to grant federal aid for the building of hospitals and health centers throughout the nation. The Board of Trustees of the American Medical Association has approved the principles of the Hill-Burton bill, and the House of Delegates has endorsed this action of the board as being within the program of constructive action toward improving the health of the people. The second recommendation of President Truman is for an extension of maternal and child health services. The Wagner-Murray Dingell bill would make this effective by increased grants in aid through the Children's Bureau, through the individual states. This constitutes an insidious attempt to turn over to the federal government functions that are definitely those of the medical profession. The American Medical Association has always favored proper aid for the extension of maternal and child health services where the need can be shown. The third feature of the President's message deals with the development of the National Research Foundation. The Committee on Post-War Medical Service, the Council on Medical Education and Hospitals, the Board of Trustees, and the House of Delegates of the American Medical Association have approved the principles of the Magnuson Bill, which would place the control of the National Research Foundation under a scientific board of directors rather than under an individual director appointed by the President. Finally, the fourth proposal of President Truman and the main features of the Murray-Wagner Dingell bill are the creation of compulsory sickness insurance. The House of Delegates endorsed the following statement from the editorial published in the Journal of the American Medical Association on December 1, 1945. No one will ever convince the physicians of the United States that the Wagner-Murray Dingell bill is not socialized medicine. By this measure, the medical profession and the sick room they treat will be directly under political control. By this measure, the great system of private hospitals and community hospitals that have grown up in our country will depend for their continued operation on funds paid to them by a federal agency. By this measure, the philanthropic efforts for the care of the sick, which has been the pride of our nation, will be forever deterred. Through this measure, competent young men who would enter the medical profession will be forced to seek other fields of action still remaining under our democracy, which still permit the exercise of individual initiative and freedom of thought and action. By this measure, doctors in America would become clock watchers and slaves of the system. The House of Delegates at their recent meeting have expressed their official disapproval of Section 4 of the Wagner-Murray-Dingell Bill for the following reason. Number one, the Wagner-Murray-Dingell Bill is founded on the false assumption that solution of the medical care problem for the American people is the panacea for all of the troubles of the needy. Two, this is the first step in the plan for general socialization, not only of the medical profession, but of all professions, industry, business, and labor. Three, positive proof exists from experience in other countries that inferior medical service results from compulsory health insurance. Number four, a program such as outlined is enormously expensive. It will result in greatly increased taxes for the entire population of the United States. Voluntary prepayment medical plans now in operation in many parts of the United States, which are rapidly increasing in number, will accomplish all the objects of this bill with far less expense to the people, and under these plans, the public will receive the highest type of medical care. Since when have our people suddenly become so ill that they need a governmental shot in the arm? Since when have our people become so helpless they cannot look after themselves? This is not borne out by the facts. More than 66 million people carry life insurance. This is the result of education. Education in the field of health and hospital insurance has just begun and can be extended on a voluntary basis, as has life insurance, to every man, woman, and child in this country. Regimentation of a nation always begins with compulsory sickness insurance. It has inevitably led to totalitarianism and complete collapse. The best example is Germany.
Thank you, Dr. Kretschmer, and thank you, too, Senator Wagner. May we turn now, gentlemen, to a discussion of the issues which these talks have raised. In his address a few days ago, President Truman painted a picture of bad health in America, inadequate medical care in many communities, and the high cost of individual medical care. Dr. Kretschmer has just pointed to the splendid progress which American medicine has made. Well, now, what kind of a conclusion are we to draw from this, Lohmann? What interpretation do you place on these two rather conflicting points of view?
With all due credit to the splendid progress made by the medical profession, the fact remains that the American people today are not as well off as they might be. On many occasions, people suggest that we are the healthiest people in the world. This, of course, is only true in making comparisons between ourselves and other very large nations. There are 9 countries, at least, in the world where the morbidity and mortality conditions are somewhat more favorable than ours. And in most of those countries, they have some form of collective action designed to treat with problems of sickness. In any event, however, I do not propose to suggest that the measure of our progress is to be made by comparing ourselves with other countries or to look at our history. The chief difficulty is this: we do not do what we can do. We should measure our success in terms of what it is possible for us to accomplish, in terms of our own potentialities. There are great differentials in the country, as between different sections, in terms of different economic groups, in terms of different social classes. Rural America, for the most part, is very inadequately serviced by modern medical care. These are things that need not be in modern America by an effective organization of our medical, of our health services.
Do you have an opinion on that, Mr. Pratt?
I have this opinion that, after all, we have, we're at the point of having passed through 4 years of war with 60,000 American doctors in the armed forces. And in all likelihood, as in all other areas, there may be some lag in the distribution of medical care in this country, notwithstanding which, in 1944, we had the highest level of health and the lowest death rate in the history of this nation. Surely, with these conditions, no one can really complain about the present quality or even the distribution of medical care throughout the United States.
I think I'd like to complain, if I may. In 1942, while 40 babies in the entire United States died at birth for every 1,000 born alive, in one state the rate was 98 and 80 in another. We find similar wide variations in maternity mortality rates. The rates for mothers who died in childbirth were 60% higher in the southern states than in New England. I was very much impressed with an account that was made of what took place at the recent meetings of the American Medical Association when one of its very important committees reported that the situation in rural America was well nigh catastrophic, and it was not a consequence of the war alone, but it was a reflection of long-time trends. Our medical services are not going to rural areas because rural America is not economically adequate in securing for itself the up-to-date high costs of medical service.
Mr. Moderator, I think that we should get on with another part of this thing. The American people, without any doubt at all, I agree with Mr. Lohman in this, that we shouldn't fix our standards by those prevailing anywhere else. We are entitled to the best, better than any other nation can provide. We're in agreement on that point. And we are at the point now of not an objective. We agree on the objective. What is of vital importance in this matter is the means toward accomplishing that purpose. And that is the thing about which Senator Wagner talked. And in my opinion, that is what we should talk about now.
All right, let's come directly to that issue, Mr. Pratt. Are we justified in adopting the kind of national health plan which Senator Wagner proposes? Now, there seems to be a little confusion about the exact status of this plan. It is, how does the current national health bill compare with the earlier Wagner-Murray-Dingell bills? And how is it related to President Truman's proposal? Let's clarify that issue.
The present Senate bill, 1606, obviously was introduced in the Congress by taking a pencil and scratching out some clauses in Senate bill 1050 that was introduced on May 24th, and practically it's identical with these exceptions. It makes no provisions for the construction of hospitals. It makes no provisions for payments for loss of wages, disability payments, and primarily it makes no provision for a payroll tax deduction or any method of paying for the limitless services it would provide.
I think it's important to keep in mind that the omission of a consideration of means for paying for these services stems from the fact that Mr. Wagner's earlier proposals were for a long time boxed up in certain committees of the Senate because of these committees are the ones in which measures which have to do with financial matters originate. And the omission of that consideration is designed primarily to give this bill a proper hearing so that the people can get it before it, there can be discussion in Congress, hearings in which the medical profession and the public as well may participate.
In other words, Mr. Lohman, it was a trick to bypass the cost.
On the contrary, I wouldn't call it a trick. I think I would just as well call it a trick to suggest that people can keep it bottled up for without any consideration simply because it happens to be in the hands of a committee which has certain very set political views.
Now, why did President Truman, in discussing this program, twice point out that these proposals are not socialized medicine?
May I answer that question, Mr. Moderator? President Truman specifies why he did this. He did twice in his message to Congress say, what I am recommending is not socialized medicine. When Senator Wagner introduced his bill, S-1050, on May 24th, he also did the same thing and made the statement, socialized medicine. These are devil words. The facts in the case are that President Truman said, socialized medicine means that all doctors work as employees of government. The American people want no such system. And that's identically why he said this is not socialized medicine. The facts in the case are, the term socialized medicine is not a defining term at all. It means different things to different people. But the legislation that has been introduced to implement President Truman's statement is worse than any socialized medicine proposal that has ever been in effect in any country anywhere in the world. It provides for an out-and-out political distribution of medical care throughout the United States to all men, women, and children.
I'd like to take some violent exception, if I may, to Mr. Pratt first dismissing of the term socialized medicine by saying it is a loaded term, meaning many things to different people, and then proceeding to substitute for it the term political medicine. Now, this does not contribute to a clarification of the problem. I quite agree with him. We ought to be able to discuss this matter without using the term socialized medicine, without using the term political medicine, without using terms such as regimentation and so forth, which are only designed to becloud the issues and not to throw light upon our actual problem. Compulsory health insurance should be and can be evaluated as such, in terms of its merits and its limitations. And we should rationally discuss it, not raise these words, these devil words, as Wagner referred to them, which immediately are raise effective barriers toward discussion.
Well, now let's get at some of the specific objections which Dr. Kretschmer has raised to Senator Wagner's proposal. I'm anxious to clarify the areas of agreement here, because I think there are some areas of agreement, and the areas of disagreement. Now, consider the 5 points that President Truman made in his report. First of all, Mr. Pratt, do you object to federal aid for the construction of hospitals and related facilities?
On the basis set up in the Hill-Burton bill, the medical profession has given unqualified endorsement to the federal government providing funds for states to make studies of hospital needs, a determination locally of hospital needs, and payment of federal funds to the state, then to finance the construction of hospitals.
Well, now,
there is no disagreement.
Do you object to the expansion of public health facilities?
Under the conditions laid down in the Act, and I want to read one little section here of the qualifying clause, we are in agreement. You set up a state plan and you determine, set up local agencies under the state plan, and one of the provisions of the bill, quoting, provide such methods of administration, including methods relating to the establishment and maintenance of personnel standards on a merit basis, except that the Surgeon General shall exercise no authority with respect to the selection, tenure of office, and compensation of any individual employed in accordance with such methods. In other words, you have a determination, a local determination of need, and a local administration with federal subsidy to make sure that there are adequate funds. And under those conditions, there is acceptance and agreement.
Now, as I follow Mr. Pratt here, and I'm going to give you a chance in just a minute, Aloman, the Medical Association approves certain things that President Truman proposed under certain conditions, the construction of hospitals and related facilities with federal aid, extension of public health facilities where the need is established, federal aid for medical education and research under certain circumstances. But the real objection comes to the compulsory health insurance feature.
Absolutely.
All right, Mr. Long.
May I suggest that some of these things upon which we seem to be on the face of it in agreement really constitute a very serious challenge to any real program that will bring about an effective change in our situation. Take, for example, the Hill-Burton bill. To approve of it, is at the same time, if not accompanied by some provision for the utilization of these facilities, to approve an effect of nothing, it seems to me. The self-same reason why many sections of America cannot create for themselves adequate hospital facilities is the reason why they cannot attract physicians, dentists, nurses, and other related services.